This tape will become part of the Scandinavian Immigrant Experience Collection at Pacific Lutheran University. The date today is June 24th, 1981. The interview is taking place in the home of Olaf Sievertsen in Puyallup, Washington, and is being conducted by Maureen Nesvig. What is your full name, please?
It is Olaf Sievertsen.
And when were you born?
I was born December 15th, 1884.
And where were you born?
I was born at the place that is called Roftsen.
Mm-hmm. How do you spell that, Mr. Sievertsen?
R-A-F-T-S-U-N-D, Roftsund.
Roftsund.
It's a sound that divides two islands.
Uh-huh.
One of the Lofoten Islands and the other is Hinnøy Island, the largest island on the coast of Norway. And my home place was just about in the middle of the sound, where it was the narrowest and where the tide ran really swift. The farm, the name of the farm was Roftstrand.
That was your father's farm?
That was my father's and mother's farm.
What were your parents' names?
My mother's name was Johanna Mikkelsen, and my father's name was Sivert Haagensen Sæther. Sæther was the family name, but he dropped that when he came to Norland.
And now your name is Sievertsen because his name was Sievert, is that correct?
I took my father's name. It was customary at the time and still is in Norway. So the family name here became Sievertsen.
And how many children were there in your family?
We were five children. There were three boys and two girls. I was next to the youngest, which was a girl.
Can you give their names or?
My oldest sister was Inga, and she married Ole Wilhelmsen, a farmer at Myrland. We'll come to them later on in the story. My oldest brother was Sigurd Sievertsen, and he became a teacher, and also he was a writer and published several books. The next brother was Magnus. He became a shoemaker, and he worked at his trade in Norway until eventually he also came to America. I finished grade school, and when I was 15, then I went to Lofoten to fish codfish. That was the custom of
when you were 15.
The young people in Norway.
You were 15 years old.
When they were confirmed, and they would go out for the first time to Lofoten.
Mm-hmm.
My father was a farmer, but he also was a fisherman. That was customary. He would work the farm in the summertime and went to Lofoten fishing in the wintertime. That was the way to make a living. 15 years old in 1915, then I went to Lofoten for the first time. And the place I went to was in the western part of Lofoten, quite a ways from home.
Did you go by yourself up there?
Yes.
How did you get the job? How did you?
My brother happened to have a shoemaker shop in that part of Lofoten. And he knew a friend of him, that was skipper on the boat. And he needed men on the boat. And Magnus suggested that I come to West Lofoten and be on the boat with him.
Uh-huh.
That is how I went there and was fishing during the winter. It was an open Nolands boat. They called it an Ottering. It had five pair of oars and, of course, a square sail. Boat looked like one of the old Viking ships, only shortened a great deal, but it was the same type. It was an open boat, and during the wintertime it was often stormy and cold. So it was a kind of a rough life, but that was the life of the young people that grew up in that part of Norway. He began fishing first part of February of 1900, and we were through in the middle of April. Then the season was over and I went home with what I had earned during the winter.
Did you earn very much money, do you think? Do you remember?
Not a great deal. I think I earned 60 crowns for the winter.
Did you get to take fish home with you too? Or?
Oh, no. No, that was fishing, that was simply for the market. After I came home, of course, I worked on the farm during the summertime. And then when next winter came, 1901, in January, I shipped out on a sailing vessel, and we went sailing for herring along the northern part of the coast of Norway. We started out first part of January, and we went along the coast up to the very northern point of Norway.
You went up, is this up by Nordkapp in that?
We went up to Nordkapp.
In the winter like that, is it easy to navigate a ship? I would think there might be ice up there, or is it ice free?
No, it is ice free, but of course there are islands along the whole coast. So you navigate practically inside waters all the way. And that is where we were looking for herring. Any place where there was a sign of herring, we would get out there with our sail and try to catch it. That was, we had all part in whatever we caught. So we were all partners in the fishing adventure. We stayed up there till the middle of June before we turned around and went home. And at that time it was really beautiful up on Finnmark. The sun would just circle around day and night, and the night was just about as bright as the day.
That was the midnight sun.
So that was the midnight sun. And as I remember, it was from the latter part of May till the first part of July that the sun never set. Well, we came home and I worked on the farm during the summer as usual.
What types of chores would you do on the farm then in the summer? What was farm work like?
We raised hay for cattle, and of course we grew vegetables and potatoes and carrots and things like that for the family. We raised most of our food on the farm. It was a fairly large farm, but a lot of the land wasn't farmed. And then we had quite a bit of upland that we used for pasture. In the summertime, the cattle, the cows, sheep, and goats, we would take them up a steep hill, and then it was rather flat for about a mile back to the mountains, and there is where the cattle was herded during the summertime. We had about three cows, three, four cows, a half a dozen sheep, and a half a dozen goats.
Was it somebody's job to stay up there with those cattle and sheep all summer long?
The cattle and sheep were housed in the barn over the winter. They never got out from, say, latter part of November till first part of April. Then we would let them out on the home farm. A little bit later, when we wanted the grass to start to grow for next winter's feed, then we would take them up the hill and back on the plateau. And the kids would stay with the cattle and watch them and herd them. Take them up in the morning and bring them back to the summer barn in the evening. Then they would be milked, and the sheep and the goats, they would be in the big corral. Kept the next morning, let them out, and then they would find their way up the hill, up back to the pasture again. And it was 5 o'clock, they would be ready to go home and milk. So it was just to watch them. That was the work of the youngsters before they were old enough to go out.
Oh, that was a children's job.
That's right. And of course, after we started to work out and earn our own living, you might say, then of course we worked on the farm, planting and cutting hay, getting the hay in the barn and getting ready for winter. You had to be careful how many animals you put in the barn. You had to have enough hay to feed them during the winter.
Going back to the fishing a little bit, did you enjoy your winter fishing expeditions as a young man?
Well, that was life. It was a kind of a hard life. Now the next winter was 1902. That was the last year I spent in Norway. First part of January, as a matter of fact, the 2nd of January, we left home on the sailing vessel and two seine boats, and we started on a trip along the southern part of Norway, in along the inland waters and into most of the fjords, looking for herring, and we went as far south as Bergen. And by the beginning of April, the trip was over and we came home. It was a couple times that we had a rather close shave. We could have not been able to get home.
Do you mean because of dangerous waters?
Storms.
Yes.
Ran into storms. In the spring, it was... As a matter of fact, always was my intention to become a teacher. So the fishing seasons, that was to save up a little bit of money for my education. After I came home in the spring of 1902, I sent in my application to Tromsø, to the college, for admittance to the school. And I got the reply that I was accepted. And I was to report first part of June at Tromsø. In the meantime, there was a family and a couple single men that were getting ready to leave for America. And one of the men was a cousin of mine, and he started to tried to talk me into keeping company to America. One reason was that the year I went to Lofoten, my father had a book of instruction in English, 100 lesson in English, and he gave that book to me to ought to have something to study while I was away. My father was 5 years in America, so he could speak English.
He had been to America for 5 years and had returned to Norway?
Yes. That probably should have been told. But in any case, I began to think it would be nice to see a little bit more of the world than just Norway. It would be nice to take a trip to America. I could stay here in all for 5 years, and then I could come back and still if I was young enough to go to school and become a teacher, as I had intended. Now we'll go back to my childhood. We'll go back to 1889. In the 80s, there was quite a number of immigrants that left Norway for America. A neighbor of ours went to Minnesota. In 89, he sent home for his family. And my father decided that he was going to America at the same time and stay in America a few years and make a little bit money so as to improve the farm after he got back. I remember the day that he left Norway. It was in the spring.
You would have been about 5 years old then?
I was, but I still can remember the day. That is one of the days that's kind of a marker in my childhood. We were sitting up on the hillside watching for the steamer that would take him south. And when the steamer came, we could see my father standing in the fore part of the boat and waving and with the white handkerchief. I can remember that very plainly. And he was on his way to America, where he stayed till 1905. Christmas of 1905, when he came home. He worked on farms in the woods, and he was a carpenter and a stonemason, so he had always worked. And when he came home, he had saved a little money and he bought a little bit more land to add to the farm. And he fixed up the buildings, and he built a new boathouse and things like that.
When your father came back from America, and when you were a teenager, did you have any idea that you might want to follow in his footsteps and go to America?
No.
Or did it just come about when your cousin suggested it?
No, it never was in my mind. My mind was set to become a teacher.
Oh, yes.
But my brother, who was a school teacher, and my brother-in-law that married my oldest sister, that was a farmer. For some reason, in 1901, they decided they were going to take a trip to America. And they left from Minnesota. We had a couple cousins, neighbors of ours, that had left for Minnesota several years earlier. So they went to relatives in Minnesota. they worked on farms during the summertime. That year, 1901, was a terrible hot year in the Midwest. So they really suffered from the heat. Then they went out in the woods in the wintertime and worked in the woods, and that happened to be a terribly cold winter. So they struck it pretty tough both ways. In the spring, they had had enough of America, and they bought the ticket. And they were on the way home at the same time I was on the way to the West Coast.
Did you happen to see them on the trip?
Oh, no. They didn't know that I was coming, and I didn't know that they were going home. And my brother was certainly disgusted when he came home and heard that I had left for America, a place that he had had enough of. Well,
can we go back and talk just a little bit about your trip over, when you and your cousin decided to go? From where did you sail, and what was your voyage like, and so on?
We were ready to leave. As a matter of fact, I didn't decide to go for about a week before they were ready to leave. Then all of a sudden, I decided I was going to America and spend 5 years here. Then I would come back and go to school. We left the 22nd of May, 1902. We went by boat to Trondheim, where I stopped and looked up a cousin of my father. But he had died, but I met his widow, and we had a very nice visit there. I was the only relative that I knew of my father's. Then we went to Bergen, and there we took the boat over the North Sea to England. That is a story in itself. It was a boat that was rigged up, the hull was fixed up for immigrants. A row or double bunks on both sides of the hold, two in height. And it was just full of immigrants.
Norwegians.
Norwegians and Swedes.
Swedes.
Each with their immigrant chest in front of the bunk. In the North Sea, we struck it pretty rough. It was stormy, and North Sea can be pretty rough. And most of the people down in the hold got seasick. Of course, I was used to the sea. I didn't get sick. But I stayed on deck as much as possible because it wasn't very pleasant down with the rest of them in the hold. We had to go up on deck in order to get our food. On the tin plate, and then we would have to find a place to eat it. So it wasn't a very nice voyage across the North Sea.
That was a sailing ship.
It was a steamship.
That was a steamship.
It was a steamship. But it was what you might call a cattle boat. Rigged up for an immigrant.
Not a very fancy boat.
No, it was very primitive. Well, we came to Hull on the east coast of England, and then we took the train across England over to Liverpool. It was a very nice trip across, and the weather was nice. And the immigrant hotel was, it was nice, clean. We spent 2-3 days in Liverpool before the boat across the Atlantic was ready to leave. Then we went aboard the Atlantic boat. Name was Praetorian, or the Cunard Line. It was a new boat, and it was nice accommodations. it was two people cabin. So he had it very comfortable on board. The food was good. The weather was good. It was a pleasant trip. Until he came over to Newfoundland, where it was rather foggy and stormy and cold. And I guess the skipper was, or the lookout was on the lookout for icebergs floating around. But we came to Quebec in Canada.
You landed at Quebec?
Yes. It was a Canadian, or a British-Canadian voyage. So we landed in Quebec. There we took the immigrant train across Canada to Sumas, Washington.
Now, was your intention when you left with your cousin to come all the way out to the northwest to Washington?
Oh, yes.
How did you decide upon this place as your destination rather than, say, Minnesota or something like that?
A neighbor from my home community had left for Tacoma a couple of years earlier. I knew him slightly. The reason he went to Tacoma was because a brother of his, a younger brother of his, several years earlier had come to Tacoma. So it was a kind of a chain reaction.
Just hearsay, that's...
Well, of course, this neighbor that was leaving, he had been writing, forwarding back to this neighbor that lived in Tacoma, or went to Tacoma. So Tacoma was definitely the destination.
The place to go.
And they had heard about the nice climate out here and how it looked like Norway, and the fishery on the vessel.
You had heard about all of that back in Norway?
These people that I went with, they have heard about it. I didn't know much about the West Coast. My father was in Minnesota. I knew about the Midwest, but not about the West Coast. But they knew, and I just went with it.
Yes. Now, I wanted to go back and talk a little bit about what it was like when you first arrived. Well, you actually came across Canada, but you say you could speak a little bit of English when you came because you had studied the book?
I studied it, and that was one of the reasons why they would like to have me along, because I could help them with the language.
Were you able to help with the language?
I thought I knew a little bit English, but you know, the written English and spoken English is...
Was your intention when you left with your cousin to come all the way out to the northwest to Washington?
Oh, yes.
How did you decide upon this place as your destination rather than, say, Minnesota or something like that?
A neighbor from my home community had left for Tacoma a couple of years earlier. I knew him slightly. The reason he went to Tacoma was because a brother of his, a younger brother of his, several years earlier had come to Tacoma. So it was a kind of a chain reaction.
Just hearsay, that's...
Well, of course, this neighbor that was leaving, he had been writing, forwarding back to this neighbor that lived in Tacoma, or went to Tacoma. So Tacoma was definitely the destination.
The place to go.
And they had heard about the nice climate out here and how it looked like Norway, and the fishery on the vessel.
You had heard about all of that back in Norway?
These people that I went with, they have heard about it. I didn't know much about the West Coast. My father was in Minnesota. I knew about the Midwest, but not about the West Coast. But they knew, and I just went with it.
Now, I wanted to go back and talk a little bit about what it was like when you first arrived. Well, you actually came across Canada, but you say you could speak a little bit of English when you came because you had studied the book?
I had studied it, and that was one of the reasons why they would like to have me along because I could help them with the language.
Were you able to help with the language?
I thought I knew a little bit English, but you know, the written English and spoken English is two different things. You study the written language and you study it the Norwegian fashion. Well, the spoken English is a little bit different from what you imagined that it would be. But it helped. It was a help.
Did you and your companions have any difficulty because of in your cross-country travels because of not speaking English?
No.
How did you manage to get along and communicate with people?
Well, I could speak a little bit. Mm-hmm. And immigrants are pretty well taken care of from beginning to end. So you can't get lost.
People are there to tell you where to go and when to catch the train and
that's
so on.
That's right. Everything is planned and laid out and you just follow the instructions and you have no trouble. We landed in Tacoma in the evening. And we got the cab. We had the address to this neighbor family. So we got the cab, and the eight of us piled in the cab. We were eight altogether, six adults and two little children.
All from Rafsund?
In the same group that came together. That was the family. Husband and wife and two children. Then there was a girl, a relative of that family. Then there was the two men, and then myself. That was a group, and we stayed together. Mm-hmm. We came to Tacoma and hired a cab. Went up the hill to 25th and L Street, where this neighbor of ours had a small three-room home. We came there in the evening and we bit it down on the living room floor. That took up almost all of the living room floor. Next morning, we went out looking for a house to rent. We found a house and we rented it. And the eight of us stay together.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back just a minute to your voyage across and your trip across the Canada. What was your feeling personally about leaving Norway? Did you expected to go back, so in 5 years, did you feel sad or happy? Or
I really didn't have a great deal of feeling about it, because now for 3 years I've been out on my own. It was nothing new. I'd been away half the year, for 3 years, on my own. I was only 17 and a half years old, but I was a grown man. When I arrived in Tacoma, I weighed 170 pounds. So I wasn't just a kid.
What was your impression of this country when you first got here? What did you think about Tacoma?
Well, it was new. It looked like a large city. And after we all was established in our new rented home, then we went out and looked over the town and got acquainted with Tacoma the rest of the week. And we met people in Tacoma, Norwegians.
You met other Norwegians?
Because this family that we came to and his brother, they were very helpful. Took us around and got us to meet the friends of theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And the Norwegian colony. It really was a Norwegian colony in Tacoma at the time.
It was. And that was up in that one part of town?
It was up on the hill, up in the west end, up around K Street and around there, mm-hmm. from 11th Street over to 23rd.
Were there Norwegian businesses and
Yes, there was a couple grocery stores owned by Norwegians, butcher shop and things like that. You could up around K Street, mostly Scandinavians, mostly Norwegians. So there was really the Norwegian section of the Kuma, and we were right in the middle of it. Well, next morning my cousin and I went out looking for work. We went down to Wheeler and Osgood. It isn't there anymore, but it was a sash and door factory. It was quite a large place, and they had quite a number of men working. And we got work on the first asking. My cousin was put in one gang, and I got the partner to pile lumber for drying. He was a young fellow. He had only one arm, but he could take the lumber and swing it up on the pile on the deck, and I would be up on top of the pile and placing the lumber for drying. So that was my first work partner, and he was pretty good. I would ask him questions about English words, and he would explain to me and give me the right pronunciation. If I said the word right or wrong, well, he would correct it. So I was learning at the time.
He was your teacher too, besides your partner.
That's right. So during that month we worked at Wheeler and Osgood, I learned quite a bit of English. I was able to speak it fairly fluently by the end of the month.
By the end of June? That would have been by the end of June?
No, the end of the first month we worked there. Mm-hmm. We drew our first paycheck, which was about $40. The pay was $1.50 for 10-hour day. There was a sawmill across the city waterway, on the west side of the waterway. And we were curious to see what it was, and we heard they paid a little bit better. We went over there and asked for work, and we got work right away. The work seemed to be plentiful at the time. The mills were running full blast. That was shortly after they were over the depression. So we got work there, and the pay was $1.75 a day. Well, we figured up in crowns how much that would be. So that was quite a bit more than the $2 a day that was going pay in Norway at the time. So we thought we were doing pretty well. I got the job to run the slab saw. It was hard work, but I was young and strong. And I worked there for a year in that mill. My cousin worked there for a while, but then he went out to start to work at Kapausa. The Kapausa Lumber Company had just started, and the Takuma Eastern was built out of Kapausa. So there were quite a number of Norwegians that went out and worked in that mill. So he got kind of sidetracked out there, but I stayed in Takuma.
When you stayed in Takuma for that year, did you live in that same house with the other people you had come with, the house you rented originally?
That was up on the hill, and it was quite a walk down the hill, down to the sawmill.
You walked every day, back and forth?
And walked up again in the evening when he was rather tired. So I rented a room in the rooming house down on D Street and 15th Street. I paid $3 a month for the room. And then I ate at restaurants. In the morning, I would go to the coffee house. The Berglund brothers, they are well known in Tacoma. They had a coffee house at 13th and Commerce Street. That is where I would stop in the morning and have my breakfast. Then they would put up lunch. 5 cents for the breakfast, 10 cents for the lunch. And I had a 10 lunch bucket. The top was for the coffee. And really, it was a pretty good lunch for 10 cents. In the evening, I would go to a restaurant. Generally, to a Japanese restaurant where you could get a pretty good hot meal for 10 cents. If you want to go to a little fancier restaurant, you paid 15 cents. But I was there to save money for my education. So I cut corners wherever I could. So I mostly ate at the Japanese restaurant. The food was good, and plenty of it.
Since you moved down to the boarding house and ate in restaurants, did you lose contact then with some of the Norwegian community up on the hill? Or?
Oh, no. No, every Sunday I would be up there together with the rest of them.
On Sunday, did you go to church with them?
Yes. So, no, we were in contact, but I was living down closer to where I was working, and I had my meals and tried to save money. One of the only luxuries that I allowed myself, I was a great reader. That was a Scandinavian bookstore down on Pacific Avenue. Really, there were two Swedes that owned it, Wiesel and Ekberg. And I would go down there and browse, and there was Norwegian papers, Scandinavian, and Tikura Posten, and Takuma Tinde, and they had Norwegian books, paperbacks. And they were all 25 cents apiece. Generally, every Saturday night, I would go there and buy a Norwegian book. That was just about my only luxury I allowed myself. Now, it wasn't very long after the Depression when 20 banks had closed in Tacoma. So people were, many of them were scared of banks. Anyway, at the time there were very little paper money. We were paid in gold and silver. One of the first things after I got my first paycheck was to buy a money belt. And you could put your gold coins in the money belt, and you wore it all the time next to the skin.
That was your bank.
That was my bank.
Yeah.
Well, during the summer and winter, these gold coins kind of multiplied in the money belt. In the winter of 1903, there was a man that was working in the planing mill. He was running one of the plane machines. Oh, he was in his late 20s, and he, in a way, became friends, and while we talked about our personal affairs, and he told me he had bought 4 acres of school land up on McKinley Hill, up on 40th Street, And he had built a little house and a little chicken house, and he had chickens up there. But then he had a bar of money, and he paid 3% a month. Well, that was 36% a year. Well, we come to Dicker about a deal. I would let him have money to pay off that debt of his. First, he wanted to sell me one of his acres for $200. Well, I wasn't ready to buy any land at the time.
We'll go on with this deal on the other side of the tape. Just have to stop it on this side.
Well, he offered that I could come to live with them, and I would pay them $10 a month, and that way I would eat up the money that he borrowed from me. And the result of that was that I stayed with that family for a year.
Now, I'm sorry, was this a Norwegian man?
Oh, no.
No.
That was an American. Clinton Flowers, and he had a fine wife and two little girls, 2 and 4 years old. So I got into a very fine American family. One benefit was that we were speaking only English. And I was lucky that I got away from the accent that so often kind of hang with the Norwegian immigrant that mostly associate with his own countrymen. I had a benefit of associate with Americans that spoke American, and I came to speak American the same way as they did.
Go on. I'm just wondering what work you were doing now. You lived at this man's house, and he was feeding you to help pay back the money he had borrowed. He borrowed money from you to keep his land.
Yes.
And what work were you doing during that year with that family?
Oh, I was still working at the sawmill.
Still down there.
To begin with, his land was close to the gulch where the railroad goes up and over to Kapausen. To begin with, we would walk from this mill at 15th Street up the railroad track and then up the bank to his home on 40th and walk back to the mill in the morning. Then the streetcar track was laid up to McKinley Hill, and the McKinley Hill car started to run up to 38. Then we would take the streetcar up to 38 and then walk from there over to 40th and East Street to his home. Well, sometimes in the spring or early summer of 1903. Then I hurt my back down at the mill, and I was laid up for about a month. And I was hurt so badly that I couldn't do any hard lifting. So I had to quit my job down at the mill. The boss said any time that I was able to work and I needed work to come back.
What type of accident did you fall, or how did it happen, just briefly?
Well, besides running the slab saw, I got the job to oil the machinery or the shafts during my noon hour, and I got a little extra pay for it. Well, I was one day I was going to be smart. I didn't have any slabs to cut, so I went up on the beams, and I was going to oil the ship while the mill was running. And there was that screw on the ship, cut hole in my pins, and tore all the pins. And I fell across a belt that took me over to the next shaft and dumped me down on the mill, and my back hurt, hit the an obstruction down on the mill floor. Mm-hmm. And I didn't break my back, but I hurt it pretty badly. That was an accident, and I could have been killed because I wasn't more than a foot away from the rezo. Well,
so you had to quit your job?
I quit my job. Mr. Flowers, he had quit his job down there earlier and started to work at the planing mill up on Center Street. And he got me a job at the center, at the mill up there as a tallyman. Now, I had a good handwriting, and I was good at figures. So he got me a job as tallyman, that is to a lumber grader. I had a pencil and a sheet of paper and on the board, and I just took tally of the lumber. Mm-hmm. So I didn't do any hard work. So that was one of the benefits of being connected with Mr. Flowers. He was a smart man. In the summer, the owner of the mill bought a lumber yard down in Kalama, and he sent Mr. Flowers down to take inventory of it. And Mr. Flowers took me along, of course. So the Flowers family and I, we went down to Kalama and worked.
Where's Kalama? Now that's down
by Columbia River.
Way down there.
As a matter of fact, at that time, the train came across the Columbia River from Portland to Kalama. That was the terminal point of the railroad that came up to Tacoma at the time. So that was Kalama. And I saw the mill and trains coming across the Columbia River. We worked there for a while during the summer, and I took inventory of the lumber yard, then we went back to the planing mill and back to our jobs there. In this, sometimes during 1903, later in the year, I got a letter from my sister in Norway that they were going to rent out the farm, and then they were coming to Tacoma.
The whole family?
Well, that was my sister and brother-in-law, and they had one little girl.
Your sister's family, okay.
Yes. Well, it was unexpected, because he had been in America and had all he wanted of it. But for some reason, well, they thought I was doing well in Tacoma. So they was going to join me here. Then I started to think it would be nice if I had some place for them to move into. So I looked around. With the help of Flowers, I bought two lots. And I started to build a house.
Where was that then?
That was on Yay Street, close to Center Street. So by the time they were ready to come here in April of 1904, I had a house ready for them. Not only did they come, but my mother and youngest sister came too. My father was going to sell the farm, so he stayed behind, but then he took sick and died shortly after. Well, there I had my mother and sister too, so I had to build a cabin for them. In the meantime, I had built a little cabin for myself, so I was living there too. So it
you had the whole, almost a lot of the family together then.
The whole family was down there together on Center and Yay. So that that kind of changed my plans. I was going to go back to Norway and become a school teacher. Well, that was just about out the window. My family was coming here. So
you really didn't have that much left in Norway then?
Well, I had two brothers. My brother was a shoemaker. After my father took sick, he took over the farm. And when my father died, he took over the farm. My older brother, of course, was a teacher, and he was permanent in Norway.
But when your mother came and your sisters, you kind of decided maybe to stay here?
Well, there was no decision. That was a foregone conclusion.
Why was that? Did you want to stay and take care of them here, or?
Well, I was the anchor man.
You were the anchor man.
I was here first, and I was pretty well established here. And after I built the house, by then I was a property owner and a taxpayer. And when they came, of course, I had half of the family here, the biggest part of the family. And then it was natural that this would be my permanent home.
How long was it before you became a citizen then? Did you start thinking about becoming a United States citizen?
I thought of that almost, yes, in 1910 when it was established that I wasn't going back to Norway. Then I applied immediately for my first citizenship paper, the Declaration of Intention, as they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And later, after 5 years, when I came up to take the examination for my second paper to become citizen, then it was discovered that I wasn't 21 when I took out my first paper. Then I had to take a new first paper and wait to get my second paper, so it was delayed.
You're supposed to be 21 years old for that.
When I got my first paper,
uh-huh,
I had to be of legal age.
Uh-huh.
And I took it before I was 21. That happens, have happened to others that I know. Well, I quit the work at where I was working, and I thought I wanted to try to life out in the woods, see how what that was like. I was curious, and I wanted to experiment. So I got the job first at Lacey, this side of Olympia, in a small camp. That was pretty nice work. But then it was a small camp and it closed down. Then I got the job down at Castle Rock, and the camp was up in the Black Hills. It was a big camp, and it was rather rough.
What was work like in a lumber camp then?
It was tough.
What did you have to do? What was tough about it?
Well, there were different jobs.
Mm-hmm.
There were fallers, there were buckers, there were knotters, and there were swampers. I was a swamper. No, I was a knotter.
Uh-huh.
I had an axe, and I cleaned off all the knots off from the tree. And, we had good food. But it was hard work, and at that time it was 10-hour days. And when it rained, you got wet. So it, and then eventually I got hurt out there again. The midday whistle had just blown. We went into camp on a little dinky railroad. And when the whistle blew, by then we were ready to run for the railroad and into camp for our lunch. I was standing on top of it, log swinging the axe, and when the this'll do. I just jumped down from the log down the brush, and it happened to be a snag, cedar snag, and one of the prongs went into my foot alongside of the sole, and I was laid up. I was sent to the hospital, but then instead of going to the hospital, I went back to Tacoma and home, and that was the end of the logging experience. Then I got a job as a painter, worked for a painting contractor. So I learned to be a painter and paper hanger.
Were you responsible for taking care of your mother, for her welfare and so on?
No, my mother was pretty independent.
Oh, I wondered if you had to provide for your family after they came.
No, they provided for themselves. My mother went, she was a kind of a practical nurse or something like that. She went, she had dozens of friends where she went, and she made a living for herself. And as a matter of fact, she was quite a financier. She saved money. She was very independent. My sister started to work as a housemaid. She supported herself. No, I didn't have any financial responsibility for them.
I see.
So
after your, what happened after your paper hanging career?
Well, the union went after my boss and said I hadn't gone through the apprenticeship to be a painter. They wouldn't accept me as a painter. And he had a hired union. They wouldn't accept me in the union as a painter. And I was too old for an apprentice. So he had to fire me and hire union painters. Well, he tried to tell him that I was a brother of his wife. He couldn't fire me. No, that didn't stick. So he finally, I had to go. Well, he was rather disappointed because he said he had another young fellow working for him as a painter. We did a better job than these union painters that he had hired later on. Well, that was that. I started to work with cement. I started to work for a cement contractor. Well, pretty soon I learned to be a cement finisher.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon I was a foreman for the cement crew. So I kind of worked myself up that way. When my family came over, there was two twin sisters and a younger brother that came on the same boat. They were from Trondheim, and they came to South Dakota, or they went to South Dakota. They had a brother that came to Tacoma about the same time as they came to South Dakota. In 1905, the two sisters came out here to their brother, and then they looked up the family that they came with over on the boat. Williams family.
Mm-hmm.
And there I met both of them. Well, in December of 1906, Helga Johnson and I were married.
In Tacoma?
In Tacoma. And in the summer of in the spring of 1907, I bought lots up in the West End, up on Grant Avenue and 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
And I built the 5-room house up there. So that was our family home. And in 1907, my brother came. He sold the farm back in Norway.
Mm.
And he came to America too. And he started to work with me at cement work. And in 1908, my brother and I and Williams formed a kind of a contracting firm, Sievertson Brothers and Williams, and we started to take cement contracts, sidewalk and foundations, basements, and things like that.
You had your own company then?
We formed our own company. And we were contracting with cement work all till 1917. That was the time we got involved in the First World War. And things were kind of crazy at the time. So I went up to Alaska.
What was crazy during the
crisis? You could bet on the job, and before you started to work, the prices would go up on material that you were using. It was a dangerous proposition. We quit, and that year I went up to Alaska the first year. I went up to the western part of Alaska, to Cook's Inlet, to a place named Seldovia. I went up with a friend of mine. As a matter of fact, he used to work for me when I was a foreman, cement work foreman. And he went up to Alaska, and he became web foreman. That is, he was in charge of making up all the gear for setting out the traps that caught the salmon. Mm-hmm. So he got in touch with me and asked me if I didn't want to go up to Alaska with him as kind of an understudy for him. So I went up there and worked.
How long were you in Alaska then?
Well, that was the season, about a 5 month season. Went up in first part of March and then came back first part of September.
And your wife stayed behind while you were there?
And the wife stayed here. Well, that is going a little bit ahead of the time. In 1910, was a tract of land for sale here. A man in Tacoma had bought 80 acres and he platted it into 5 acre tracts and sold it on very reasonable terms. Well, we saw the advertisement and a few of my relatives and myself, we bought 40 acres out here.
In Puyallup?
On Mountain View.
Mountain View. It was called Mountain View?
Yes.
In those days?
At that time it was called Mountain View.
That's because obviously you could see Mount Rainier from here? Or?
That's a story in itself. The name Mountain View hadn't been heard of before 1908. Then they started the telephone company here, Mutual Company. And they needed a name. Well, they thought Sunrise would be a nice name. Then, at the meeting, one was sitting there looking at to the east at the mountain, and he said, "Why not call it Mountain View? This is such a nice view of the mountain." And the name appealed to them, and it stuck, and it became the Mountain View Telephone Company. Then the community took the name. It became the Mountain View Community. Then the congregation changed the name from Puyallup Lutheran Church to Mountain View Lutheran Church. And it's been Mountain View ever since.
So you bought some acreage out here, and it was pretty much country in those days, I suppose. Was it like the country then?
It was all wild country, and this was in heavy timber. The trees were so thick that it took about 2 weeks before I knew there was a wagon road in front here, because we came in on a logging road, shingle boat road that had been taken out to see the shingle in here.
And
that started up here on the corner on 49th and wound around.
How many acres did you have here?
Well, I bought first 5 and then I bought 5 more.
Uh-huh.
So I had 10 acres.
Did you intend to farm out here? Was that your intention?
That was my intention.
To have a farm?
At the time, I had 2 children. One was 2 years old and the youngest was just a month old.
Uh-huh.
Was born during the summer of 1910. We went out here and we pitched the tent and we started to fold timber and make cordwood out of the timber. Well, I was the only one, no. I and my brother-in-law, husband of my youngest sister, we started to clear land out here. And he helped me to build a 2-room house.
How long did you have to live in the tent then before you had your house? Was that very long?
Oh, we probably lived in the tent for a month's time or so. Then my brother-in-law and I rented a house and I got my family out here and we built the house here and then moved in. And from then on, this was my permanent house, home. And I rented out the house in Tacoma. So, raising a family, I decided I didn't want to raise it in town.
Why was that?
Well, I figured it was so much nicer out in the country. I was really a country boy, not the city slicker.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then shortly after, we started to clear land out here and fall trees, and they noted the commotion up on the hill. Nils Merck came down one day. He was one of the old timers up here. And we were out in the woods and he peeked into the tent. They thought it was Indians, some of them. They didn't know what had moved down here in the woods. And then he met us and was surprised that it was Norwegians. We were talking Norwegians. Well, we became a part of the community almost right away.
Did this community consist of Scandinavians or of Americans too? What kind of community was it, would you say, out here?
It was a Norwegian colony.
It was?
Oh, there were many Americans. But in 1903, there were 6 Norwegian families that came here. There were 2-3 Norwegian families that came here in 1900. So there were a colony of Norwegians, and they settled right around where the Mountain View Church is located now.
And is the church nearby here? Where is that church from here?
A mile up the road.
Uh-huh. And that church was here when you came out in 1910?
Well, the congregation was organized the 29th of December, 1904. And then it was called Puyallup Lutheran Church. And most of the services were down in Puyallup. Well, in 1909, they built a small 18 by 30. And of course, then it became the Mountain View Church. And the services were held up here.
Mm-hmm.
And it discontinued in Puyallup.
Did you attend that church regularly as soon as you moved out here?
That became my church.
Mm-hmm.
I belonged to the church in Tacoma. Pastor Skattebøl from Parkland was the pastor. He organized the congregation. And he was pastor until the church was built. Then he resigned that summer. Then the congregation went into Tacoma to Pastor Hogan. That was my pastor in Tacoma. And he consented to come out here and preach once a month. And that connection with Tacoma had lasted for 30 years. So really, my church in Tacoma was connected with the Mountain View Church. Well, I transferred from Tacoma to Mountain View and became a member of Mountain View congregation as soon as they had their annual meeting in January 1912. And it so happened that I was elected secretary of the congregation before I became a member.
Were services held in English or in Norwegian?
It was all Norwegian.
It was Norwegian. How long did that last? About how many years do you think before it became English?
Well, we started the Sunday school in 1910. I became superintendent in January of 1912. And it was all Norwegian. In 1918, we started the first English Sunday school class. Then there was one class in English and the rest for Norwegian.
Mm-hmm.
Well, finally in 1922, all the classes were English.
What about the service?
The services were Norwegian. Pastor Holen became pastor after Pastor Hogan resigned. And all the services were in Norwegian. Sometimes he would stay over and have an English service in the evening. We had, to begin with, we had one service each month. Then we had services every 3 weeks.
Do you think that that church, how was that church important to this community? What did it mean? Was it a sort of a central place for people? What did the church mean to this Mountain View area?
It was the center of Mountain View. It was the center of all activities. It was the center of the social activities. All the meetings were held in the church. We organized the Young People Society that met in the church. As a matter of fact, all the members of the Young People Society, some were over 50. But it was the social nub.
What types of social activities? Would you get together, would the people get together at Christmas and have special dinners and things like that? Do you remember things like that?
At Christmas, the Sunday school had always had a Christmas program. And of course, everybody attended. The little church was full. As a matter of fact, in 1912, the church was too small, and we built onto it and made it a kind of a cruciform church, 30 by 30, with a nice steeple. And we also got a church built. Regular altar and pulpit and baptismal font. And it was really a nice little church after it was completed in 1912. We had that church till 1926, and that church also was too small. Then it had to be torn down because we wanted a new church in the same place. And we built the church 30 by 48. At that time was a pretty good size. Later we added 16 feet to it, and in 1949 we built two additions, one on each side, and that's the church, the old chapel that is now. In 1965, then that was too small. We had two services. And when the church was packed at both services, we had Sunday school in the same church for almost 200 Sunday school children. And it was pretty crowded. Then a new church was built. And it's a big church. Seats.
The old one was the one that you had added on to through the years had been torn down to then to build.
No, it's still there.
It's still there.
That's the chapel. And the new church can seat 200 or 600 people.
But you were in on the start of that church way back in around 1910, 1912.
Well, of course, I wasn't in when they first built the first one. But when we added to it, then I had a team of horses and I hauled timbers from the woods for sills and things like that, and worked on the church to build it. And I've been involved in the church work ever since.
Do you think that churches are important to many immigrants or Norwegian people in particular, Scandinavians? Do you think the church is an important part of their life?
Absolutely.
Why do you suppose that is?
The church, the immigrants, the first thing they thought of was to get a minister to come and hold services in the homes, baptize the children, married young people that want to get married. So the church was a very important part of the very first immigrants that came here. When more of them settled, then of course they were able to build the church and get the minister. Sometimes the minister would serve several congregations. But the church was really the center of the immigrant population, something that they brought with them from the old country, because there the church was of course a state church and everybody belonged to the church. So it was part of the Norwegian culture.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now you eventually had, you say, five children? You and your wife had five children?
We had seven children.
Seven children.
Two of them were born in Tacoma. The rest were born right here.
In your home. Or did your wife have a midwife, or what was childbirth like in those days?
My mother was a practical nurse.
Oh.
She was a midwife. She took care of the first two in Tacoma. And the first one out here, that was born out here. After that, we had a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But most of them, they were all born here in the home.
Yeah. What were your children's names, or what are your children's names?
The oldest was Sigurd. He was born in 1908. Next was Magda. She was born in 1910. Arthur was born in 1912. Bernice was born in 1915. The twins, Olive and Helen, was born in 1917. Esther, the youngest, was born in 1920. There you have the family.
Yeah. So you raised your family up out here in Mountain View on your farm?
Yes. They are all living except Sigurd. He passed away 5 years ago. He contracted some lung ailment and finally he passed away. His wife, Angela, lived on the other side of the farm here. Her home is just on the other side. He had 5 acres here. And I sold him after I retired. I sold him chicken business. So he was the chicken farmer.
You say that you have never returned to Norway.
No.
Now, many immigrants return to Norway. Why do you suppose that you... did you ever think about going back to visit your native country?
I really didn't think much of it, but my wife didn't want to go. She absolutely wouldn't go.
Why do you suppose?
Well, she lost her mother when she was a child. She was brought up with the neighbor family, she and one brother. They were nice to her, but she really didn't have a family life, you might say.
Most of your family came over here, so...
It was just my older brother that was left back there.
Uh-huh.
I really didn't have a great deal to go there for. Of course, my brother and his family, but we corresponded regularly. The contact were very good between us. And now he died in the early 50s. And then, of course, his children kept up the contact. We corresponded. So, in a way, we are very close.
Yes, so you still correspond with his descendants.
As a matter of fact, I had 3 letters here. During the last couple of weeks.
Uh-huh. Are those in Norwegian or English?
They are in Norwegian.
And you write in Norwegian?
And I write in Norwegian.
You write in Norwegian?
I can write, it doesn't make any difference whether it's English or Norwegian.
Can you still speak Norwegian quite well, or do you speak it sometimes?
I can speak it, but not, I'm out of practice.
Uh-huh.
So it is a little bit more difficult for me to speak Norwegian than English.
How do you feel about that time in 1902 when you came over here to the United States? Are you glad that when you were a young man in Norway you made that trip all those years ago?
I'm satisfied with the move I did. I have had a very interesting life and a full life. And I've had a happy family. I have no doubt that being a school teacher in Norway is just a shade about the average. So then that would have been all right. But I've been very satisfied here. I've been busy, probably sometimes too busy. I've been too busy to even seriously think about a trip to Norway. And after I retired, I didn't care to leave my wife and go there for a trip. And then she became sickly, and for 2-3 years she wasn't well, and finally she passed away. And I've been happy here since by myself.
When did you build this home? You mow this whole acre of lawn here and more over on the other side.
Yeah, she got about the same thing.
Yes.
But then I got the writing board, so I just sit down and steer it like a bicycle.
What are your main activities now then? You mow the lawn, you are active in your church still?
No. See, I was secretary at the from 1912 to 1955, when I gave it up my handwriting. I didn't like my handwriting, so I figured it was time to.
Do you attend services?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was Sunday school superintendent up to for 42 years. So I was active in the church, and then I took part in the community life. I was school director for Berry Association, water company, and the telephone company, name it, and I was in it.
Did you ever belong to any Scandinavian organizations, for example, the